This episode of Storyworthy is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You can register a domain name now for only $2.95.
Yeah, that's right. GoDaddy is offering OneNew or Transfer.com for the very low price of $2.95.
Yeah, whether you're starting a new business, you just want to put your idea online, or you just want people to look at you because you need attention, you can make a new .com or you can transfer a .com for only $2.95.
And when you're over there at GoDaddy, enter the code STORY295 in the promo code at checkout, and then you are in fact supporting this podcast.
Hey, it's Laura House. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannah Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Walmart on Crenshaw Boulevard, deep in the hood of Los Angeles. Why? Because we are at the aisle where we're going to buy the Hollywood 48-Hour Miracle Diet, which is a big bottle of juice.
Is that what it is? It's just
basically
juice?
It's a big bottle of juice, and it's all you eat for 48 hours. Now, why you can't just get a bottle of your own juice, I'm not sure. You need the miracle diet, apparently, with the vitamins.
Well, wouldn't you lose weight if you only drank any liquid? I mean, if you only drank chocolate milkshakes
right,
for 2 days.
Right, if you basically didn't eat for 2 days, you would probably lose a couple of pounds. You'd put it back on immediately, but that's
yeah, in
not
other words, if you're only putting one thing in your body, even if it was just Coca-Cola, wouldn't you lose weight in a two-day period with just a liquid?
You think, actually, Coca-Cola, though, is so high in sugar that sugar turns immediately to carbohydrates.
Yeah, but still, so, if you have no protein, you have nothing to build
right,
upon.
Right.
Wouldn't you automatically lose weight?
Well, also, you know how you lose weight? Just being tied up in a room for 3 days, not eating, or being sick. It's like there's all sorts of ways to lose weight, but there's
right.
very few healthy ways to lose weight.
Okay, okay. I don't even know if our guest tonight was talking about doing this juice
Juice cleanse is our topic.
But I don't even know if that's why she was attempting to lose weight. I don't know if that's why she went on a juice cleanse, because different people
do it for
different reasons. Well, of course, people have all, you know, sorts of reasons, like spiritual reasons, or they're trying to detox their bodies.
Spiritual reasons.
Or they're trying to stop something habitual, like smoking or overeating, caffeine addiction, something like that. So there's different reasons to go on a juice cleanse.
That seems tough. If you were like trying to kick smoking by also not eating, it would be like just really distracting myself. So it's like I've got the shakes from not smoking and I'm starving.
Well, I'm excited because Laura House is here. She's our guest and she brings forth a topic. And she's a very accomplished writer and comedian, Hannes.
She is. She is. And
she has a
name, which she means she could almost, she also can diagnose weird things.
All right, so her topic is juice cleansing. Also, people call it juice fasting, like you said. And it's sort of a controversial fasting method in which, like you said, a person consumes only fruit and vegetable juices to obtain nutrition while otherwise abstaining from complete food consumption, eating nothing else but the juice.
This is just, to me, it sounds horrifying.
Well, it's tricky. The health benefits are unproven, and many health professionals consider them potentially dangerous. Because the fast could last anywhere from a few days to a few weeks.
Well, no, I've heard of the one, not a juice cleanse. It's the one where people have water with maple syrup and cayenne pepper, and that's all. That's all they have. That's all that you have for like 7 days. It's water, lemon juice, maple syrup, and cayenne pepper.
Right.
I don't know why the cayenne pepper like.
Clears
somebody
your
said to me, it's like,
oh,
they want you to, I think that's to distract you from the fact that you're starving. It's like you complain about how hot your mouth is. I don't know.
Well, also sometimes if people get sick, right, or if they have cancer, even arthritis or severe depression, then they might go on a juice fast, you know, to maybe just shake up their body, you know, put your body in a different place.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, as a guy who's never been thin, I'll say that the idea of not eating has always seemed like a horrifying idea to me.
Hmm.
Just like, I mean, I understand that I probably eat too much and I probably eat too much of the wrong thing. That's not the same thing as, well, I'll just stop eating entirely. That seems like I'm going too far in the other direction.
I've never had that discipline to do that. Unless I'm having a test, like I had a CAT scan last week, then I can't eat for a certain amount of time.
I'm pathetic,
like,
because if I'm getting my blood drawn for any reason at all and they say, okay, so, and they throw off, they go, don't eat for 12 hours before you come in tomorrow at noon. I'm like, what? I can't eat past midnight?
Those appointments, you need to make those appointments at 8 or 9 in the morning, Hannes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying I'm such a wuss that it's like, even if it's at noon, I'm like, oh, I got, what about my 1 a.m.
I looked up this juice cleanse thing. I looked it up a little bit and getting some information. Now, there's some criticisms about it, of course.
Yes.
Because of the low sodium content of most fruits and vegetables, they say a salt deficiency might occur. And that can cause headaches, weakness, nausea. And as a detox diet, scientists, dietitians, and doctors regard detox diets as less effective than water fasting. In other words, if you're going to fast, just do water. It costs a lot less money.
Yeah, that's that also sounds – that just sounds more natural to me. Like, I think it's possible – you know, it might be possible for your – you know, good for your body. Just, like, let's not take any food in for a while. But juice, you're just cheating.
And
I don't
here's
know.
Here's a chief dietitian of St. George's Hospital Medical School in London, England. And she says that the concept of detox is a marketing myth rather than a physiological entity. What do you think of that?
She had me in a marketing myth, but she lost me a physiological entity. I don't know. It's like, I get it. They're trying to sell juice. What is physiological entity? What the hell does that mean?
Well, in other words, they're saying that the idea that you can give somebody an avalanche of vitamins and minerals and laxatives or give them all this, try to cleanse their body of whatever for anywhere from 2 to 7 days, that it can't possibly have a long-lasting effect.
Yeah. Oh, no. I see. Yeah, and it's also this whole vitamin thing. First of all, vitamins and pills, by the way, apparently are completely ineffective and not taken in by the body. And even if you ate, like, nothing but oranges, your body can only process so much vitamin.
I don't know about that, because, like, when I was pregnant and I had to have, like, you know, my blood tested a lot or whatever, they saw that I was anemic, so then I get more niacin or I take whatever, and then, in fact, my numbers went up. So, I mean, it did correlate, clearly.
Okay. And all right. Okay.
Well, that's
okay.
Enough.
You know what? Okay, you talked me out of it. That's fine. Listen, I heard somebody somewhere say it on the radio while I was getting out of a car, so obviously I believed it.
Well, here's the thing. The detox industry is a huge success, but the industry seems to be based entirely on marketing slogans and what it's going to do for you.
Well, it's based on the fact that Americans don't, you know, it's like, look, there's really only one way to lose weight or be healthier, and that's to eat better, eat less, and exercise more. But Americans are like, no, I want it in a bottle. I want a plan where it's like, I'm going to, you know, I'll spend 7 days out of the whole year being all healthy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'll spend every other week of the year, you know, 51 weeks of the year being a complete asshole to myself. But if I spend, you know, it's like, it's a childish mentality.
But when I hear people going on these juice cleanses or water cleanses, I think, like, man, I wish I had the discipline to do that. But, like, I truly don't. So don't you ever wish you had that discipline to really deny yourself? Like, if I don't have weed for 2 days, I'm like, I am in a cleanse. Well, I'm cleansing now.
You see, you buried the lead. See, the reason that you can't stop yourself from eating is you can't stop smoking weed. You're like, man, I need some juice, man. That's right there is probably the main reason you're hungry all the time. And by the way, you're one of those people who eats. But you know what? You don't actually eat that much and you're skinny, so, you know. What the hell?
Okay, first of all, as you know and I know, I work out 5 days a week, Hannes. I play tennis or hike 5 days
a
week.
Well, then why are you saying you have no discipline if you work out 5 days a week?
No, in terms of food, in terms of denying myself food, I could never do that to myself.
But you don't – yeah, but the reason – but you don't need to because you're not – I mean, you do work out. If you didn't work out and you ate everything in the world, you'd be fat. But you do have the discipline – that you will go out and play tennis even if you don't feel like it because you know it's good for you.
I always feel
it's
like
a completely different
Ladies
right.
and gentlemen, I think Hannes Finney is trying to give me a compliment. And
I know.
You don't
it's
think
really,
I'm going to put this on a loop and
no,
play
it's very
back.
Upsetting to me. It's
this
very,
is very
I can't,
exciting.
I'm getting a feverish feeling in my head.
All right,
I don't
listen,
understand.
I love this topic.
I need some kale juice.
Bring
me some kale juice and vodka.
As long as it's gluten free. Okay, so we're very excited for our storyteller tonight, Laura House, and she's on her way here. But before she comes in, I did want to mention, folks, if you want to support Storyworthy, here's a way to do it right here.
Tell us one of the many ways.
GoDaddy is offering a new transfer.com or a website for $2.95.
Right.
And GoDaddy has come a long, long way, Hannes. They've got this
awesome.
Very simple website builder that you can use that I use for Shuck and Storyworthy. Anyway, so it's $2.95. If you head over to GoDaddy.com and in the promo code at the end you put Story295, you will in fact be getting a website for $2.95.
Yeah, you can transfer a domain or you can make a brand new domain. You know, and it's like maybe it's for your hobby, maybe it's for your business, whatever you want to do. $2.95. Come on,
yeah,
people.
Get your idea online with GoDaddy.com, and don't forget to enter the promo code Story295.
That's Story295.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, and of course we're on the Facebook now and then. Are we not on the Facebook?
Every once on the Facebook. I'm going to revamp the MySpace page because I feel that that's going to make a comeback.
Hannes is going to be back on Friendster, so you can follow him there. All right, you guys.
We're going to take out personal ads in the LA Weekly. That's how far back in the technology we're going to go.
Stay where you are because Laura House is on her way here. Folks, if you happen to be in Los Angeles on Wednesday, May 28th, we've got a terrific show going on at the Hollywood Improv, a benefit for our friend and producer, Sean Merrick.
That's right. It's at the Hollywood Improv on Melrose Boulevard, 8 p.m. May 28th, which is a Wednesday, a mere $20 admission, 18 and over. You will love this show, and you are helping one of the best guys in L.A.
That's right. Sean Merrick, our producer and the producer of many other podcasts here in Los Angeles. He's a great guy. He's going through some tough times. So come on down and help support Sean Merrick at the Improv May 28th at 8 o'clock. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer Emily Krauser.
I'll be telling a story about how I out-dramaed Snooki down the Jersey Shore.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
This is Frank Nicotero, and you're listening to Storyworthy. You know that.
Left Walmart and we have driven up to a it's a different kind of cleansing place from the other end. That's all
the
I'm
colonics
say.
Place.
The colonics place.
The thing with the colonics place is they're right in the plaza. You know, they're right. So first you stop by Subway sandwich, get yourself.
You go to Orange Julius.
No, because we're not in the 80s. You don't go to Orange Julius.
Orange Julius still exists in my mind.
All right, you guys, she's here right now, Laura House. She's a comedy writer and a performer, and she starred in MTV's Austin Stories. You remember that, Hannes?
Do I?
I don't know. I asked you.
No, I don't.
She's also performed stand-up on Comedy Central, NBC, and HBO, and she's also written on several top network shows and has had her essays featured in many books. Just recently, she wrote for CBS's Mom with Anna Faris and Allison Janney. You love that show.
That is a great show, and it's Sherry's favorite new show.
Oh, she's super talented, and she's here right now. You can find her at laurahouse.com and also on Twitter, @IAmLauraHouse. It's very simple.
@IAmLauraHouse.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together.
LauraHouse.
For Laura House.
Aren't we all? Laura House.
Orange Julius definitely exists. It definitely exists. Usually in the more rundown of the malls, you'll find it. Always across from a chocolate chip cookie place. So I'm here to talk about juice cleansing. And my story is this. Last summer, I worked on a great and stressful network sitcom, like all of them, and TV tends to be consuming, and people who work in it tend to be consuming lots of carbs. And by the end of it, I needed relief, and when my job ended abruptly, I got it. On one of our last days, my office mate was typing away at what I assumed was the next big pilot that would start a bidding war while I was killing time scanning up rocks. With as much self-pity as I could muster, I asked her, "You working on a script?" She said, "No, I'm pricing tickets to Italy." And out of my mouth came, "I'm going to Bali." I have no idea where that came from, but I knew I was going as clearly as if it had already happened. But I had no idea what to do in Bali. I knew meditators who'd gone there, but I'd had my fill of that for a while. And I had a friend who'd gone and bebopped around there with her friend, but I didn't have a friend to go with. And I wasn't going to fly across the planet to just sit around like I do in Studio City. Stumped, I did what all spiritual people do when they want a deep answer. I got out my iPad. I got real quiet and centered, and I thought, what do I really want to do? anything. Surf camp in Costa Rica, Broadway shows in New York. What kind of break do I actually need? And the answer came, raw food retreat. So I did the second thing that all spiritual people do. I Googled it. There was a 10-day raw food retreat in Bali starting within 2 days of when I'd already planned to go. It had sold out, but on the website it said they just added a few more spots. I had to assume for me. I don't want to be all, ooh, I must be in the flow and the universe is looking out for me, but the writing is on the iPad and I'm clearly God's favorite. So I rented an open-air hut on a rice paddy, of course. I flew to Bali, and I started my raw food and juice cleanse. This was the deal. 5 days of raw food, and then 5 days of raw juice. I am secretly fascinated by raw food. Years ago, I ate at a raw food place in Santa Monica, and there was a sign that said, become a raw food chef, $3,500, and I filed it away as a possible plan B. Is this like the healthiest way you can eat? Like, how do you make a tortilla out of mango? Unmolested nutrients, full enzyme power, but you put it all together and you call it lasagna? What? And it's considered gourmet. Is it possible to make vegetables awesome and sexy? I wanted to know. This wasn't just a retreat. There was also instruction with certification. So it wasn't just a cleanse. I was actually going to Bali to become a certified raw food chef. Had I ever done a juice cleanse before? Hell no. I'd started lots of them. They're easy. You start with a juice in the morning. Then around noon, you get hungry and you eat a sandwich. Then, and this is important, you swear that you'll try it again in 2 years. But on this, I dove right in. And to be honest, the first day was awful. We skipped breakfast, lunch was late, and dinner included mashed potatoes and gravy made of raw cauliflower and black sesame seed gravy. The next day, my body kicked in with detoxing, which felt like getting the flu. My sinuses drained now that they were free of dairy, so it felt like I was getting an ear infection. And feelings came up, so I was crying, which happens when you stop eating sugar, meat, dairy, soy, grain, cooked food, everything. Aching, snotting, and crying. Did I mention I flew across the globe for this? Detox is rough. All the toxins in your body depart. Poisons leave, and they're not happy getting evicted. They kick you in the balls on the way out. So to ease all this discomfort, you want to help your body get the toxins out, and they come out of everywhere they can. You want to pee it out, so it's good to drink lots of water, and water with a lemon, so it's alkaline. You want to sweat it out, so it's good to be in heat, like an infrared sauna, and you want to fully get it out, so it's good to do colonics and enemas and that sort of thing. I did all these things. I signed up for every treatment I could. I didn't fly across Earth to half-ass it. Day three, colonic one. I'll admit, I was uncomfortable. Amy, our raw food guru, had taught us a lot about the gut. A lot of bad news. That most people who've eaten a standard American diet have acidic systems. Sugar does it, meat does it, alcohol, soda. Take a second to think of your three favorite foods. Got it? Yeah, they all do it. They're all acidic. And I'm from Texas. We took the standard American diet, added chili and cheese, deep fried it, and slathered it with barbecue sauce. I am country fried acidic. Acid creates an intestinal breeding ground for parasites, things that live off the host and can even affect your personality. It can make you tired, hungry, moody. It can be candida, yeast, worms. She, being from Oklahoma, just calls them critters. How charming. I went to my first colonic not knowing what to expect, except horror. I lay on the table in the little office, and Maureen asked if I was comfortable. I assumed this was rhetorical, as I was helping her insert an aggressively foreign object into me. I was then invited to lean back and just relax as my guts were blown up with water from her hose. No problem. I lay back, and I thought about that carnival game where everyone mans a water gun and points it at the mouth of the plastic clown face, and the first one to blow up the balloon wins. She told me to just let my body relax. Organs, I didn't know this, but they clench up like fists, apparently. And you have to unclench and let go. This often involves deep breathing and more crying, I'm told. It was all going fine till something felt stuck. And there wasn't flow. And she told me to breathe, and I breathed. And she asked me what I was holding on to, and I didn't know. I was trying to let go. And she told me I didn't have to know the answer. Just tell the truth. What am I holding on to? What do I want to let go of? And I didn't know. And I was panicking, and panic means clench. And I couldn't let go. And I had to let go. And I breathed, and I panted, and I cried. And then it came out. I went out of my job. And this was awful news, as I've only ever wanted to do my job and to be in comedy. That is all, like, I'm not anything if I'm not that. And it was devastating to say, and a total surrender, and it all let go. And there was flow, and I was lighter, and it felt like something had literally come out of me, like something I was holding on to at a level so deep I didn't even know it was there. And I experienced relief. Maureen looked at the machine, and then she put her hand on me compassionately and asked, did Amy tell you about the stuff that gets in the intestines? And I said, sure, yeah. She mentioned the yeast and the critters and stuff. And Maureen smiled and said, good, because a worm just came out of you. Oh. What the fuck are you talking about? I'm not going to lie. This was a low point. I guess it was because a worm came out of me. What do? Do you ask to see it? Do you name it? Billy the belly worm from Bali? It begs a lot of questions. Was it just the one worm who was so ready to come out? He jumped ship at the first chance he got. I assume it's he, or am I full of lady worms? That seems somehow worse. Like there should be a code. Hose before being a parasitic infestation on your gut lining. Am I so infested with worms that this was the beginning of many? Am I just like a worm pinata now? It was horrifying. I went into Encyclopedia Brown mode to solve the mystery of the gut worm. So think about it. I've never eaten a worm. I'm sure I would have noticed. So I must have eaten a pre-worm and then nurtured it to term inside me. I don't have children. So in a way, this has been my only birthing experience. If you learn nothing else here, know this. It is very disturbing to have a worm come out of you. But immediately after Billy came out, I felt lighter, freer. Something had been in me, living off me, uninvited. And later, I stood straighter. And here's where it gets really hippie-tastic. I genuinely felt more love in my heart. And I had to wonder about that theory that we may all be affected by parasites living inside us. And I had to conclude, I think that worm was making me a real asshole. Billy taught me to live, to choose life, George Michael would tell us. A parasite can't live off something fully alive, only something in some state of decay. No more acidic stuff. No more fried foods, no soda, no coffee, more vegetables and greens, juice cleanse Fridays and hot yoga. I'm all about detox now. I'm renewed. I completed the 10-day program, not one drop of cheating. I transitioned out of the juice cleanse, flew back to LA. I redid the kitchen. I got out the Vitamix. I bought hemp seeds and blended smoothies. I squeezed lemon water, took salad to Thanksgiving, made nut pate and raw pesto appetizers, wowed friends with raw hazelnut cacao pie, secretly made with Irish moss, the gelatin of the raw food world. I also tried a taco and it was fine. And I tasted a turkey burger and it was also fine. I split a muffin with a friend and oh my God, it was so good. I had coffee again and I'm now lost to it. I celebrated Cinco de Mayo with nachos for lunch and dinner. And I choose to call this balance. As for the job, I rented my own office for the first time. I finished a new script, and I finished another script. I turned down a high-paying job that didn't feel quite right. I reached out to publishers, and there's interest in my book. I'm going on a ton of interviews for jobs I really want. I make a point to speak my truth more often. Sometimes you can do the same things you've always done, but completely differently. So I do stuff more consciously, knowing what I might be feeding. I take Billy with me everywhere I go, in my mind and heart, not like in a jar. That's disgusting. And if you'll excuse me, there's a double soy latte with our name on it.
Okay, can you describe the worm? Because you did see it.
I got to tell you, I signed up for several of these treatments. This was my first one, so I was just, I couldn't look at it. So, no, I didn't actually see it. There was a girl on the retreat who did take a picture.
I have, in fact, had a high colonic.
Did you have a worm in you?
Why do you have high colonics, I wonder?
Because it's going high up into your, I think it's
Is that opposed to a low colonic? Oh, maybe I'm thinking of a colonoscopy when you get put out.
That's where they put a camera up.
There's two tubes that go in. One is the water going in, and then they turn it off, and the water goes out through the tube.
How many times did you go?
I had three of them.
Three of them.
So by the end, I was like, let's do this.
Yeah.
But the first one, and she said it was, and I was just like, okay, thanks. I was so mortified.
I'm sure they see everything. Obviously.
They see everything. No, it doesn't bother her. That'd be weird if she was freaking out.
Right.
That would be really disturbing.
The colonic girl's like,
the kind of juice.
Gross.
When you are on the juice cleanse, is that the kind of juice you can, anybody can get that? Or is that like specialty juice and vegetables?
This is raw juice that was made on the premises. And also I think like, here's the thing that I think people, because I'm now pro juice cleanse, and I would say what flipped for me having this experience, because she also taught it as a coach.
Right.
She wasn't just like, hey, fatties, just drink your juice. Like, and also it was a lot of...
That's very bad coaching.
Yeah, but a lot of people approach it that way. Like when you guys were talking about, like some people just, I'll lose weight, so I'll just drink this. And you know, that it's like baby attitude of like, I don't want to make a big change, but I'll just drink juice.
Right.
A lot of times that juice has a lot of... sweet stuff, like you're thinking fruit juice.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're like basically backing off from food, which the raw food for 5 days helped by the time it got to the juice, because it was like, oh, I've just had basically vegetables and
but could
seeds
you have sushi too,
anyway.
Or it wasn't any meat?
No, it was a vegan raw.
A vegan raw.
So this was
a chill go up my spine. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But the juice cleanse, like it's vegetable juice. It's like non-sugar.
Right, it's not the
juice
sugary.
Because you're also cleansing like the candida and the yeast and stuff feeds off sugar, even if it's the sugar from coconut water, and there's nothing wrong with coconut water, but if you're trying to actually detox and make a change in your gut, you want to avoid
regular orange juice is full of sugar.
Any fruit juice.
Yeah. What is
so
a candida?
This is a lot of like,
what's candida? What's that word?
I'm no
that's
expert.
It's an opera by Leonard Bernstein. No, that's candide. Hang on.
I'm no expert on this, but it's like when it gets into yeast, like when people would talk about the Atkins diet and they were like, don't have any carbs. Mm-hmm. It was to address candida. It's like a yeast that lives in the gut. Like if you have... if you have it, if you'll notice, if like you don't have sugar, you feel fine and your belly feels kind of flat. And then if you had like half a bag of M&Ms and the belly just like widens quickly,
it bloats quickly,
that's like a yeast in there that's like going sugar.
It's feeding.
And I believe candida is either the same thing or it's related at least.
That's very interesting. I hadn't heard that. Now that restaurant in Santa Monica, I once did a little stand up in that restaurant.
Raw Planet?
Raw Planet. I mean like a hosting thing in that. Mm-hmm. And we were
that's
interviewing
so funny.
The chef. And what I found fascinating about that restaurant is there's no refrigerator in that restaurant because everything is fresh. Fresh. They don't use refrigeration. There's no stoves. There's no microwaves. There's no cooking.
Well, there's definitely no microwave.
Yeah, it's so strange.
Microwaves actually kill nutrients and enzymes in foods.
It takes it away.
Like if
right.
the least of what you do is not use a microwave, like you're getting more nutrients.
So this is really, actually, I just got rid of my microwave 2 weeks ago, not because I wanted to, but because it blew up. Because
popcorn. Our microwave died last year, and we have not replaced it.
Yeah,
we
I'm
do
not.
Have what I consider the greatest invention of the world, the toaster oven.
I knew you were going to say that.
God, I love the toaster oven.
I also love the toaster oven.
Oh, it's fantastic.
A nutritionist told me, and I had no idea, but she was like, it's basically microwave scrambling your food. Like, you're not getting, like, vitamins and nutrients.
By the way, can I just say, just as a sidebar, I've been waiting for someone to make an Encyclopedia Brown reference. Thank God.
Finally.
Everybody have a drink.
Everybody, yeah, I know. It's like the worst drinking game in the world. You drink whenever someone mentions Encyclopedia Brown every 10 years.
Bugs Meany, I'll take it.
Yeah, I loved Encyclopedia Brown. You know what Encyclopedia Brown's first name was?
Charlie?
Leroy.
Oh.
Leroy Brown. Yeah. Was he bad?
Leroy Brown.
That's...
He was not bad. He was encyclopedic.
Listen, I find it fascinating that you just said...
Is there a Wikipedia Brown? Can we update
There could be. That you just went by yourself.
Some new kid.
No, but that's a pretty big deal to go by yourself to a retreat into a
Indonesia.
Country. Right. I mean, where, of course, people speak
it's
English.
It's an island,
but
right? Bali's
very,
an island nation.
Right. And so you fly into Bangkok or you fly?
Flew to Thailand, to Taipei, mm-hmm. and then into Bali. It's a very long flight.
Yeah, very. It's the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's great that you did that and alone by yourself
in
a hut.
Healthy.
Yeah, on a rice paddy.
I was in a hut on a rice paddy.
And
yeah.
you left your medical information at home with somebody or something, or you left some information. I mean, it's just, you
I
know.
Bought travel insurance.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Good for you, man. Had you really considered surf camp in Costa Rica?
Oh, yeah, totally.
People say Costa Rica is really great.
Yeah,
as
people
well.
Say it's amazing.
I've heard that.
And it's much closer. Yeah, I mean. And these jobs are stressful, and
yeah,
they also pay a lot. Like, a friend of mine, I had a pilot at Nickelodeon a couple years ago, and when it was done, I was like, oh, I just want to go on vacation. And somebody told me that her friend was a very successful sitcom writer, mm-hmm. and she builds it into her pilot that she will vacation after. Like, it's like she considers it part of the job. Like,
right.
I'll do this pilot, and she considers budgetary part of my fee for this is I'm going to take, like, a full vacation.
So explain to people TV writer hours, because, like, I used to date a guy who was a writer, and, you know, I didn't see him. You just don't see them.
You sort of disappear.
And so tell people about that.
Well, you write till it gets done, and so it depends. I mean, it varies from show to show, but they tend to be really long hours. Like, pre-production is simple. It's sort of 10 to 6. But once it gets into production and it's like, oh, this scene didn't work in the rehearsal, we're here tonight to we fix it, or that whole act didn't work, or the network said
so it's,
you needed higher state, whatever, like whether a note comes down or something just wasn't working, you know, yeah, you can easily be there till 10 o'clock at night or midnight. Or
yeah, I remember this guy being there till 12, 1, 2 in the morning. I mean,
yeah.
They just stay.
Or come in on Saturdays sometimes.
And I remember in their writer's room, they did have a board where you could write, or it was in the kitchen, you could write anything you wanted on that magnetic board, and it would appear in that kitchen.
Oh, anything you can order. Yeah, they all have that. It's amazing.
That?
The first time I had that, it was because I had been teaching. I taught seventh grade, and then I did TV, and then I went back and I had a part-time teaching job.
What subject did you teach? English.
I taught, I have an English degree. I taught reading, actually, and I taught Texas history in Texas. And I did journalism. We did the school newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And then out here, when I needed a part-time job, I got a job teaching at an Orthodox yeshiva.
Wow, that's interesting.
Really conservative private school. So there in the teacher's lounge, you're just like an old arugula, fantastic. And then I got a job writing on the first full sitcom was the George Lopez Show.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, you know, whatever. It's the kitchen is like a 7-Eleven where everything's free.
And you open the drawers and there's just drawers of paydays and 100,000
bars. And you can think about what you want
bars.
And it'll appear. It's like Hogwarts. You can like, how's that for a reference?
Yeah. And all,
you can like,
every soda.
Is there a Butterfinger? And there is a Butterfinger. Like, yeah, anything. And then if they don't have your particular, you know, like lime bubble water.
Seltzer
like,
water that
yes,
you want.
Like,
put it on the board.
Yeah, put it on the board. It's there that day or the next day, depending on when the PA goes to the store.
Because essentially, if you're a writer on a television show, you get in the morning, you go up to their offices, and they don't want you leaving there.
You're chained to your chair, and so they just keep feeding you.
But they do break off.
Which is why everybody there has a terrible gut problem, because they can eat anything in the world, and you're tired.
It's the way you would tame a monkey. Like, you're just like, we'll just keep putting food on the table, and it will never occur to them to leave.
Yeah. Now, there is a writer's room. Writers are sitting around the table, and then you get maybe sent off to write with one person or something like that, right? So there's different ways of writing?
There's different ways of doing it. Most of the shows I've worked on, well, I guess I've worked half and half, but some rooms, everything is gang written.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always at the table, and every now and then the room will like maybe break in half, and this half of the room will like punch up, you know, script 3, and the other one will punch up script 4. But for the most part, everything is written in the room. Then there are other ones where you break the story in the room, and then they assign, like, Christine, you go write that episode. You bring it back in 2 or 3 days. You go write this other episode. Bring it back. Then it gets punched up together.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. And the mm-hmm. person punching it up is the head writer.
No, everybody punches it
or
up
or everybody
together.
Works together.
Yeah.
But the head writer is who you're giving your pages to or
yeah,
who you're reporting to.
He or she is the person who – you're not just giving your pages, but it's like sometimes you'll read it through together
mm-hmm.
and then people will be like, oh, I had a punch for that, I had a punch for that. And it's the head writer that's like sort of gives the nod of like whether or not that gets replaced.
So as you tell us this, and you know, people out here are listening – We've got, you know, listeners all over the world, actually, and they're listening and they're hearing about being a sitcom writer. And mm-hmm. so far, it sounds pretty good. I mean, you are writing in a creative way. You get any food you want, and you get paid very well.
Yeah, you get paid really
so
well.
So then when you're in Bali and the lady is saying, you know, what do you want to get out of? And then you yell out, my job.
Yeah.
Tell us how that...
Well, that's... And I was trying to address that with the end of the story is I think that's like... I've had a couple jobs where people yell. And I've had a couple of jobs that are sort of... like, TV writer jobs are very stressful, but sometimes they can be unnecessarily so because of...
the dysfunction of the person in charge.
Yeah.
Certain
that's
people.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. So I think for me it was like... Like, essentially because of my experience, I'm still... Because I'm definitely a comedy writer. Like, there's nothing else I want to do, and mm-hmm. there's nothing else I care to do. But I can be more conscious about it. And take, you know, like, I think you get treated the way you let people treat you. You mm-hmm. know, like, I think I can be... like, I'm still moving in that area, but more consciously. Like I said, like, I rented an office. I've never done that before. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is my office.
You're
I'm
trying
write
to take
my
some thing. Power
Yeah,
back.
Taking that back and doing it more consciously and doing it more like, well, what am I sincerely drawn to as opposed to, okay, whatever, any job.
And now that you have a few years under your belt writing on a lot of these network shows like Samantha Who and Blue Collar TV and The Rosie Show and Mad Love, you can get a little bit of money, so maybe now you can concentrate on what you really want.
Yeah, it's
and
more like that.
What kind of scripts do you really want to write?
That's such a great question. I didn't expect.
Movies,
I got some. Let me pitch this to you.
Uh-oh, here we go.
All right.
It's for you. You play... the new colonic girl in town. You've just opened a place in Beverly Hills. No, follow me on this.
All right.
Because you find this is it's a workplace comedy, but yet they're really a family. But there's always a guest star coming in, you know,
and
Katie Couric or something.
It's
like
called Rich as Shit.
Yes, exactly.
And
they always
the
go
worm
in the back.
Is like your sidekick.
Right. Oh, no.
He's
it's like,
jar.
Yeah, it's like
He's
an imaginary. You know how, on you know, yeah, it's like Stewie on a Family Guy. Only you can hear the worm talk. Sits on your shoulder. Okay, I love it. Fantastic.
All right, good.
Okay, hey, go ahead. Give us a serious answer.
Well, the first script I wrote years ago that sold to ABC was about a girl pretty much with my personality mm-hmm. who, like, I used to think of it as, like, the Janine Garofalo voice,
yeah.
but some might say Juno. That's sort of like a girl that's
smart,
like...
Smart Alec.
Yeah, kind of smart Alec, exactly. And she... dresses up for Halloween from a thrift store outfit, and it's a superhero suit that actually gives her superpowers.
I love this.
But kind of dumb superpowers, like laser fingers and stuff that she doesn't want, that she's like, this is horrible. And she has a nerdy boyfriend, like loves him, but not the nerdy stuff. And he's like, you've got to save the world. Like, you're Spider-Man. This is amazing. And she's like, no, I don't, like, you're good at math, you're not an accountant, like, you don't
right.
have to, just because you
That's
have some
right.
skill,
yeah.
you don't have to apply it to, you know,
I love that.
She was like, you have legs and arms, be a cop.
Yes.
You know, and he's like, what? Like, I mean, no one really twists it that way.
Right, right.
And of course she has to end up using it. But that was, so I found a super suit and we sold it. Barry Sonnenfeld was going to direct it. Like, we sold it to ABC. It just didn't move forward
right.
into getting made.
That's
so, like,
exciting. I love this premise.
I love, like, and I never, it's taken a while for me to admit this. I love kind of magical realism. I love, like, this is a real world. This is life. But this one little
Did you
weird
love Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Happening. I didn't watch that, but I love, like, Mork and Mindy.
Oh.
And I loved, like, there was a movie back in the day, The Girl, the Gold Watch and everything. Like, mm-hmm. it was a little watch that stopped time. And what were some of the more, like, Third Rock from the Sun?
Sure.
You know, like, this is our world, but there's this weird thing.
Tweet. Right.
Yeah. And I just like that because you're telling real stories about... your own consciousness, but you're just kind of using this
now,
device.
The other day it came up, Hannes and I were talking mm. about when Happy Days, we thought they jumped the shark. Not when Fonzie jumped the shark, but when in fact they brought
when,
on Kazoo.
Mork?
Or Mork came on. Yeah, it wasn't Kazoo, was the
right, somebody said,
but
yeah.
But all of a sudden there
it's
was
like,
a...
It's like, because there was an
Mork.
Alien Mork. On the show, and then they just dismissed it by saying it was all Richie's dream.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I just have to point out and that what I then was compelled to say was that Laverne and Shirley jumped the shark when Laverne and Shirley and all of their relatives and all of their friends moved simultaneously from Milwaukee to Burbank.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody that they knew, 35 unrelated people decided, we like Laverne and Shirley so much, we'll travel across the country with them.
And we'll all live in Burbank.
And we'll all live in Burbank. It's like, okay, there you go.
Not weird at all. Yeah. Not any suggestion that the producers just felt like changing the scenery.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I just remembered another one. It was Jake and the Fat Man. Remember Jake and the Fat Man?
Didn't watch it.
Didn't watch that.
Jake and the Fat Man was... the fat man was William Conrad, of course, and he was the district attorney of Los Angeles, and some good-looking guy was Jake, his top investigator. Mm-hmm. First season took place in Los Angeles. Second season, Jake, his investigator, and the entire office suddenly moved, and we're now the district attorney of Hawaii. And then we're all in Hawaii together. It was like, well, and they had like one line where they're like, you know, I've always wanted to come back to Hawaii. Anyhow, and suddenly they all have left their jobs in Los Angeles and they all have the same job in Hawaii.
I'm guessing Hawaii 5-0 was big. And they were just like, you know what? We've got to like something, it's Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah,
these are network decisions.
Yeah, like what's wrong with the show?
I was going to say, as a writer, you're in the writer's room and then you see that they're going to go down a path like this. Or you know, let's say you were a writer on Dallas and then you... Uh-huh. All of a sudden they said, oh, Bobby was in the shower. It was a dream the whole time. And you're in the writer's room, and then you have to be like, okay, then we go with that. Like, it's not your choice, is
it? Yeah, it depends on your level of seniority. Like, you know, yeah, like lower-level writers can't just go, that's idiotic.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Because then they're like... You're free to leave. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're out of order. So
we need more Butterfingers. Go get them.
It's something that like upper levels, but even like Drew Carey's show was great and successful. And he was pretty open about notes he got that I thought was interesting, because I think a lot of people, you'll look at, you know, TV stars or like people have their own shows and you're like, oh my God, they have so much power. Like, I'd love that. Nobody tells you what to do. And it's like, no, someone's always telling you what to do.
Yeah, they're paying for it. They're
so
telling you what to do.
So is that part of the pressure then?
He was pretty open even get stuff through.
Yeah, he would have ideas. It's his show. He's the star. It's his name's on it. And they wouldn't let him do things.
It depends. And then, like, I was just working for Chuck Lorre, who, like, does have a lot of power. Because he's made billions of dollars for the studio and the
network.
Which
show were you working on for
him? That was Mom. That's the Chuck Lorre show.
Oh, that is Mom. Okay. Yeah. And so, but is that a lot of the pressure then? Because there's this feeling of hierarchy in the room and almost like a high school feeling of there's personalities could be clashing or... It seems like there's a lot not said in writers' rooms.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, I mean, you're on, but there's a lot of, like, feeling out the room and room politics and when do you talk and when do you not talk. And there's a lot of, I mean, you're really, you know, it's not like you're just sitting in, like, you've all had a great long dinner with your friends that you were just like, oh, my God, I can't believe it's midnight. We've just been laughing for hours. It's incredible. It's not like that.
Right.
Like, it's
very
plus
serious.
You work in a bank.
Yes.
Well, it's not very serious, but it's like you have to be funny, but you're also, like, at work and it's professional and you have, you know, there's a lot that you're doing. So it's something like morning DJs are on the air for like 4 hours goofing off.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like 12 hours, you know, working at a high level of producing comedy and also being careful to like not
step on toes.
Exactly.
And and it seems like comedians, and not just, I'm sure in all of comedy, it all goes downtown very quickly in terms of like sexual references and language.
Just downtown.
Like, it just, everything
goes
seems
down
to
Fifth and Spring.
Everything seems to be
that downtown.
Really raw, right? I mean, it gets really raw because language has to be.
Stuff can. It depends on the room. Again, like, the showrunner sets a real tone.
Yeah.
So some rooms are really dirty or misogynistic.
You
and
can't
some,
be offended,
some
though.
Some just aren't. Oh, no, no.
These are just words on the table and we're putting them in a certain order.
No, you don't want to. It's not for you if you're easily offended, for sure.
Right. Not
if
for
you're
you,
the person that's like, I don't think that's
appropriate.
Kind.
Right. Right.
But that's not who I am.
No, that's not who you are. I know that. I want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy, but let me ask you about True Tales and Lust of Lust and Love.
Yeah, this book came out in January. I'm in it.
And you're in one of the essays?
Yeah, I wrote I'm the headliner.
Oh,
it's
wonderful.
The last essay.
Oh, wonderful. And what's the name of the essay?
I always want to headline a book. Who books that?
Yeah, I think it's called My Own Private Stripper. At one point it was called Stripper Sherpa, which I actually really liked. But it's, when I actually transitioned from working at the yeshiva into a TV job, we all went to Vegas for the night to a strip club. And I was like, oh, this is like, I went in with all these judgments and then I was just like, this is great. Like, everyone is so nice. Like, I totally get, you
now,
know,
this
like
was this place with female strippers or with male strippers?
No, female strippers. Yeah, right. It was the guys that were going, but I was really just blown away by like, they're just nice.
Except
it wasn't...
that's because they want you to give, they want a lap dance. For
well, no, of course it is. It's also, it was just nice.
It was just
people
everybody
being
was
nice
kind.
To you in
yeah.
a room. Yeah.
It was
great.
About nice. I know.
And they made an adjustment. Like, I'm sure with guys, there's a different vibe. But with me, they were like, cute shoes. And I was like, oh, I love it here. Like,
see, I went to a strip club
cool
once
girls.
With
Who
Bobby Lee.
Who does your anal bleaching, you said?
I went to a strip club with Bobby Lee. He was judging a dancing thing. Right. And we were down at the Comedy Store in La Jolla. And so he was doing this show. And so I went with him. Yeah. And I'm sitting there in the back. And all these girls are coming around, like you said, being very nice to me, very sweet.
Yeah.
But it didn't occur to me. Like, it took me like 15 minutes to realize, oh, you want to dance on my lap and for me to give you money. Like, I just, that didn't even.
Well, it wasn't, I didn't even get the feeling they wanted to dance on my lap. It's just their job to be nice, to make you feel comfortable and wanted there. And I was like, I do. This is awesome.
This works quite well.
Yeah. So I had this kind of night of like, I had no idea. I'm just gay enough to really love it here.
I just thought of a great scene from 30 Rock where it's like, Tina Fey is somehow in the strip club trying to get Tracy Jordan out of there. And this girl comes up. She keeps trying to, and she puts money in her G-string. She goes, this is for computer classes.
Nice. That's great. Learn to type.
Let me ask you also about two more things. The Dave Feldman Show.
Yeah.
And how's that podcast working out?
It's great. I'm a guest on there quite a bit.
I love that. I love a reoccurring character. We have a couple of people. I love that on a show, on a podcast.
No, it's funny. He's so smart and great and funny and
he's
political.
He's very intelligent.
And I'm just basically there to call him an idiot.
Yeah, I love it. I like that dynamic.
He seems to love
That's
it.
That's kind of like what Hannes and I do here. I'd be the smart one. And then, listen,
That's
this is
I
a
got.
Very
That's
funny
it.
Thing you
Don't
do
nailed it.
That I've looked at. And this is when you go around to different targets with your buddy Greg and you prank, you're really pranking your friend Greg, and he's pranking you.
Shopping prank on mediocre films, if you want to Google it.
Well,
it's Greg's thing, really, and he had me do it with him as a guest. But yeah, it was, I know Greg from the Acme and improv and sketch, and he's so lovable and great, and so he goes into like Target or whatever, like I've seen it at Whole Foods, he has several of them. But it's one of his most popular films, like his millions
shopping
of
list
people.
Prank.
Yeah, shopping prank. And so this was shopping prank Easter that we did, and he was like, all you do, and I was scared to do it because I was like, do people get mad at you? But I make a list for him of items that aren't real but maybe could be. Like, I made him ask for an air guitar, and I made him ask, like, time
a garage
machine.
Door closer.
Yeah. I actually had him ask for a back door opener. Speaking of like,
and so you're asking the employee at Target.
Yeah.
And you say it in a very straight face.
Yeah. And I had him ask for like Beats by Dr. Phil.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, you totally straight face. You're like, oh, I just need a few things. Beats by, he had me ask for mommy cream, and he asked for, one of them was, I go, yeah, I need a baby's first rejection letter. I just want her to be prepared for life.
So now then they direct you, of course, to the baby section.
Sometimes they're like, the what? We don't, that's not a thing. Or sometimes they're mostly trying to be helpful.
You asked for sanitary napkin rings.
Yes, because I like a good presentation.
And then Greg asked for diet water.
Yeah, diet water. Because if you drink a lot of water, you don't want to pile on the calories.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Or a gravy hat.
Yeah, I had to ask for gravy hats, and she was like, that's going to be in accessories? And then I asked for something else, and she said, I think that'll be over by the gravy hats. Like, she was listening so much.
This is, again, shopping list prank. You can find it at mediocrefilms.com or at your website, laurahouse.com. Do you share these sorts of things?
Yeah, I think the video's on my website.
It's very, very funny.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy that you got that worm out of you. I'll say that.
I'm all better.
And I'm happy that you are on a good path. You seem very happy and moving forward.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, congratulations.
That's nice.
Excellent, yeah. Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yeah, let's do it.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
school days. I loved school. I loved school because that was the first time that we got to buy clothes of the year. Like, we only bought clothes one day a year, and it was for starting school, and you had to make some big decisions because this is all you get to wear for the next year. And my mom was a teacher, and my mom was actually a teacher where I went to junior high, which makes you immediately the least cool person on the entire planet.
Yeah.
A kid came up to me one day and was like, and a kid that I liked, Corey, and he was like, your mom flunked me. But I was so brainwashed by my mom, I was like, you flunked yourself. And I'm like 12, and I just want boys to kiss me. And I'm just like, oh, this is never going to work. And then I ended up, when I grew up, I wanted to do comedy, and my mom was like, we'll get a teaching certificate. So I ended up teaching seventh grade. And I was actually, I started at 23, which is way too young to do it. I was going in hungover, trying to hide hickeys. And this one kid came up to me, and he was like, hey, you want to go get high? Like, he just thought I was a kid. And I was like, we're going to the office. And he goes, I'm pretty sure we'll get caught getting high in the office. And I was like, I'm a teacher, and I'm taking you to the office. And this kid goes, you're already high.
A great school day, because you take it all the way from when you were in school to then when you teach school.
Thanks.
Narc.
I often think
I was a narc the whole time.
It was like Undercover, or what is that? It's 21 yeah, Jump under, Street. You were 21 bus. Jump Street before there was 21 Jump Street.
Yeah,
were,
as an actual kid. Yeah,
I often think I should have gotten a teaching degree. I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
Oh, no, not at all.
Because you have
saved
it forever.
Me several times.
Yeah, you have it forever, and you can always get recertified in the state you need to or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it gives you, I would think being a teacher gives you a, you know, like a syllabus for how you approach things. There's this. Does that help you with writing, do you think?
Not the teaching, because you have to make up your own syllabus.
Can't you yell at yourself?
If you're writing something. Yes, I totally
give yourself demerits.
I never just get up and use the restroom when I'm working. I feel like get a hall pass.
Suspend yourself,
no,
Laura.
There's a lot of useless things I've taken with me. I grade my own scripts, and I'm like, a B-. You got to work. This is a professional endeavor. You got to work harder.
You're circling your writing with red pen.
Yeah. This makes no sense. I just go into.
They fired me. You fired yourself.
That was very funny. And is your folks still back in Texas?
Yeah, my dad's still there. Yeah.
And how did you lose your accent, or you never had it?
Oh, no, I had it. I lived in Norway for a year, is the truth on how I lost it.
You moved to Scandinavia and
I was a foreign exchange student. Well, yeah, you do, because here's the truth of it, because I took a linguistics class in college that broke it down. So I'll authentically answer your question. So everyone has a point of focus when they speak. So for people, like if we refer to nasal, their point of focus is actually in the nose. So
that's why I know all about that.
It's why it kind of sounds like that. Yeah, exactly. And this sort of Fargo stuff is like right in here at the mouth. So Texan accent, it's at the back of the throat. Like it's almost like you, like if you think about that point at the back of your throat and like you're talking to somebody right behind you.
Texas drawl.
Yeah, like you almost don't even need your mouth.
Wow.
Like that's a Texan accent.
Coming all the way from the back of the throat.
Just back of the throat, like heading right
in. And it went down, it went downtown again.
It's real low and it's right at the back.
Right.
And so, but a Norwegian is, none of it is slurred or mumbled. It's a very, like the focus is in front of the lips. And so it's like, hva heter du? And so I lived there 11 and a half months, my junior year of high school as a foreign exchange student, and I learned the language, and so I just started speaking like this. Like, my focus moved to the front. My muscles in my mouth changed.
Yeah,
like
I find
my
that
smile.
Fascinating.
It was fascinating, I thought, and I didn't understand it exactly until this linguistics teacher explained it to me. So when I came back to Texas, and my friend, and I knew I had an accent because at foreign exchange student camp, they called me Tumbleweed. But so I definitely had a full accent. But when I came back to Texas, people were like, we missed you. And I was like,
wow.
Ooh, I'm just going to keep talking like this.
Yes.
And so it now sounds general, or sometimes people place me East Coast. People think I'm New York-y a little.
I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I knew the way my oldest sister talked, that's the way I wanted to talk, because she didn't have the accent at all. And I would try to emulate her. Because in Pittsburgh, I don't know where the hell that's coming from. That's coming from the beer gut is what that's coming from, the accent.
Rocky Balboa was Philadelphia, right? Is that
right.
The same?
No, it's different.
Little Pittsburgh, say something about the Steelers.
It's, you know, going downtown to see the Steelers and that, you know. tell your father to red up the Hass. You know, my brother's coming over. My brother's coming over. We're going down to the Steelers.
Brother, yeah.
Yeah, yes. You know what? You're holding your... It's interesting. I'm looking. You're holding your mouth and your jaw differently when you do that.
Right.
So I think it's like... It looks like it's down here in the jaw. Like your jaw's not moving in the top.
I don't know.
That muscle under the tongue. Like
yeah, that's where you're... Whereas, you know, in Milwaukee there, you go, you got to go where the bus turns the corner around.
It's a very
you
know, nice.
It's all right in the nase. It's right all up in the nose right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I find it fascinating, people that do voices well. I was just listening to Dana Carvey. He does a spot-on Obama. I mean, spot-on he can do Obama. Mm. It's really interesting. So listen, thank you so much for coming by the
show
today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super fun. Awesome.
Yeah, thank
and we're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Anthony Bench and Sean Merrick. And, of course, John Thomas Griffith. You know, Hannes, that's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
I don't know who that is, but I want to thank Billy the Worm.
And also,
that's who I want. Was it Billy?
Billy.
It was Billy
yes.
the Worm.
So let's thank... Right.
Hey, thanks, everybody.
Thanks for the house, Laura House.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I need to move out somewhere roomier. I got a job and I wanted to get out and get some air.
And on behalf,
I'm a butt worm.
Oh, see, I went downtown.
I
went
live
downtown.
In this mud house. I want to live.
Oh,
in my
see
own
now.
House. And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Story Worthy on iTunes and visit the Story Worthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.